You sure you people didn't drink? Jeez, they all look so good. I don't know. I didn't look this good when I come in. Let me tell you. Yeah, my name's Dick, and I'm an alcoholic. And I'm a member of the Hopeful Group in Lago, Florida. And as you can tell, I talk funny. I'm from Boston, you know, and that's where I got sober. You know, and it's quite a trip up there compared to down here. You know, when I got sober, I remember I went to my first meeting, and some guy was at the door, and he shook my hand. He says, "Nice to see you." I'm looking at him, what the hell's he want, you know? Right away, you know, I went up and I sat down. Needless to say, nobody came and sat next to me. You know, everybody kind of left me in one row by myself. And I was watching the people coming in the door, you know, and I'm going, geez, she's too old to drink. Look at this guy. Oh, God, talk about inventories. I took everybody's, you know, and it was really something. You know, and I'm watching the people coming in, and this one girl comes in, and she sat, you know, about four seats away from me, and she started ripping handfuls of hair out of her head, you know, and I'm looking at her, I'm going, whoa, you know. Then this other guy comes in, and he's got a broken arm, and he's got a sling around his neck and braces, and I go, ooh, look at him. You know, and then the guy in the corner kept him falling out of his chair, you know, every 3 minutes. Someone would pick him up, stick him back in there. And I'm thinking, geez, maybe I'm not that bad yet. You know, I can go out. You know, these guys are pretty well shot. Then this other guy comes walking in the door, and he falls over the table, knocks a coffee pot on the ground. Of course, it was Blind Scotty, but somebody moved the table in the wrong spot. You know, so he went over it. Oh, it was unbelievable. So then when I first meet him, I'm sitting there, and it was a beginner's meeting, and this guy, Mike, he got up to speak, and he was talking about he was so paranoid, and he had the fears, you know. He used to sleep with a loaded gun in his hand because he knew people were going to get him. Now I could identify right away, you know, because at the end of my drinking, you know, I'm sleeping, I got a butcher knife under my pillow, I got a bat by the side of my bed, I got you before you could get me. I don't know who the hell you were, but I was ready, you know, and I was paranoid about everything, you know, and she's this one girl I taught this, she goes, "Know what you should do, Dick? Try a little more grass, calm yourself down." You know, now I had everybody following me, and, you know, it was unbelievable. You know, everywhere I went, there was someone following me, cars behind me. Then I was sitting at home watching TV. The people on the TV were watching me. You know, it was getting worse and worse, you know. And at the end of my drinking, you know, it wasn't fun no more, you know. I used to be able to drink large quantities of anything. Now, near the end of my drinking, I have two or three beers, and I was staggering around, you know, and I couldn't understand what's happening. I say, God, the only thing I could do good was drink. Now I can't do that. You know, so I remember up north they got a newspaper, and the paper it says, if you have trouble with alcohol, call this number. It was an AA number. So I said, geez, I'll look in the paper and I'll find that. So I'm going through the newspaper, and I see it every time I went through the paper. Now that I want to find it, I couldn't find it, you know. And I said, God, I'll never find this. God, I need some help. I said that, and the phone rings, you know. I pick up the phone, and it was my wife's cousin, Edie, you know. And this is a girl that used to call the house, like, at Christmas time, my oldest daughter's birthday, because she was her godmother, you know. And she never called the house. And she goes, "Is Arlene there?" And I goes, "No." And she goes, "Is Arlene having a problem with alcohol?" I go, "Oh, yeah." You know? She goes, "How you doing?" I go, "Tell the truth, Edie. I'm looking for the AA number." She goes, "Well, don't look any further. I got the book in front of me." I goes, "What book?" She goes, "The big book." I goes, "The hell are you talking about, the big book?" You know, and she goes, "No, I can tell you where the meetings are. I've been sober, you know, 6 months. Now, this is a girl that used to live upstairs from me. I never saw a drink at all. I never seen her take one drink. Talk about a closet drinker. She was one. She had to be. So she told me where to go, you know, the next day where I could go to a meeting, you know. So the next day I got in, I called work, told them I wouldn't be in, I'm sick. And all I could remember it was a church on Hancock Street in Quincy. Hancock Street was a main drag in the city. It went from Quincy to Braintree to Dodge. It was probably, you know, 8-9 miles long, you know. And I go, geez, I can't remember the name of the church. You know, so I figured I'd take a drive run and ride up and down the street. I'll see the church, and something would click, you know. So I'm riding up and down, and in the city of Quincy, just about every other corner, there's a church. You know, so I'm looking, and I'm riding along. I get the radio on, and I said, God, I'm never going to find this place. The guy on the radio says, there's a Rummage Sale, St. Chris's Church, 545 Hancock Street. I goes, that's it, you know? I goes, you know, hey, no coincidence, you know? I'm getting messages on the phone, now the guy in the radio is telling me how to get there, you know? So I figured, geez, I must be destined for this, you know? So, like I tell you, you know, I had the first meeting I went to, and I parked out front, and I'm watching all these people walk in, and I'm going, God. So I was at that first meeting, and I listened to Mike, and he got my attention, because he said exactly what I was feeling. You know, I was paranoid, I was suicidal, I was homicidal, and I was really on the rim, you know. And life was terrible, you know, and I said, you know, if this thing don't work, I'll blow my brains out, you know. And I was talking to a friend of mine, and he says, well, you better load the gun 3-4 times before you hit anything, you know. That wasn't very encouraging, you know. But I found out right away, you know, I used to see the old-timers sitting there. They're so serene, you know, relaxed. Then everybody smoked at the meetings, and I have a pipe. And so I sat next to this old guy and says, how's AA work? He goes, good. I'm waiting, you know, nothing. Oh, that was it, good. So I goes, well, what are you doing? He goes, you don't drink. If you don't drink, you can't get drunk. I thought the guy was a genius. I never thought of that. I goes, why didn't I think of that? I wouldn't have to come here, you know? But, I mean, they're very closed-mouthed. They didn't give you a lot of information, you know? They really worked on you, you know? But I come to find out, you know, that it was hardcore. You said yeah, but to anybody, they wanted to throw you out of the hall. There's no yeah, buts in AA. You know, you do it. You know? And they'll tell you right to your face, you know, you don't like it here, kid. Screw. No one invited you. I thought they were supposed to help you. Now he's telling me to screw. And you looked at him. I went to every meeting he went to. This is a show, you know, to look at him, you know? And I'll tell you, I used to take notes at the meetings, you know, mental notes, whatever I had left. But, I mean, people would say, well, we're going to this meeting tomorrow night, you know. I'd say, tomorrow, yeah. So I'd go to that meeting. They weren't there. Cross them up. They're full of shit. You know, this one's a liar. That one ain't here. You know, and that's how I was checking everybody out. You know, so I usually tell this one person a few things, you know. And I wait a couple of weeks, see if anything come back to me. It didn't, you know. So I ended up joining that group. You know, and it was the best thing I ever did. They put me up front, you know, greeting people coming in, and then I started making coffee. And I think I made coffee for about 9 years. Down here they have a shorter thing, I guess. I don't know. But it was the best thing I ever did was get in a group. You know, groups don't get drunk. You know, and I had a marvelous sponsor. I had a woman sponsor. You know, and she was terrific. You know, and there was no alternative motives. She was hooked up with another guy and this and that. But, you know, the way the guys used to talk to you, yeah, I figured I'd be out in the yard punching people out every night, you know. And I said to her, you know, I heard about this group in Cambridge. And thank you. Is that what I got left? Wow. I don't know if I can remember where I am. So there was this group in Cambridge where they didn't drink, but they allowed everybody to smoke grass. So I said to my sponsor, I goes, geez, can we go to that group? I'd like to join that group. She goes, are you crazy? She goes, you know what will happen. You know, you pick up and, you know, and I listened to her, you know. There was about 200 people in this group. A year later, there was nobody left. That told me something, you know. If I play around with something else, I'm going. You know, because I'm very easy that way. You know, I pick up anything that alters a little mind I got left. I've had it, you know. You know, I had 3 brain cells left, and, you know, every once in a while they click together, and I'd go to say something, they'd tell me, sit down, you know, and I'd sit down, you know. I didn't fight AA at all, you know. As my experiences were, you know, with the way my life was going and the way things were, I didn't want to end up like the rest of my family, you know. My father was alcoholic, and he used to go to Bridgewater every winter, and they'd lock him up and, you know, pick corn or whatever the hell they do. I don't know. He used to go in the buddy field with my Uncle Al, and, you know, he ended up dying in the gutter up in New Hampshire. I remember they called the house, and they were looking for my mother. You know, I answer the phone, they ask, Lonnie, your mother? I go, yeah. And then he goes, George, your father? I go, yeah. Well, we got his body up here, you know. Ask your mother if she wants to come up and claim the body. So it's okay, you know. So my mother was working, and she was staying at this other lady's house, and I called her up, and I goes, hey, Ma, some guy called, and he wanted to know, George did up in New Hampshire, wanted to know if you want to claim the body. She goes, claim the body? She goes, I didn't even want him when he was alive. So I said, Ma, what are you going to do? She goes, I'm going to go play bingo. That was the end of Dad, you know, and that was it. And my Uncle Al, he froze to death under a porch, you know. He had a pint of port in his hand, half gone. You know, they caught him one time under this porch, and they took off 4 toes, and then about a year later, under the same porch, and he froze to death under there. I had 3 aunts all on that side of the family, all died in their early 40s through the use and abuse of alcohol. My father's family all died from alcohol, including my grandfather on that side. My mother's side, nobody drank, nobody smoked, nobody swore. They went to church and everybody worked. What side do you think I took after? You know, me, my brother, and my sister. We all picked up the drink. We all married alcoholics, and we are alcoholics. My brother drank himself to death at 44. And the only thing good that came out of that was when he died, it woke up my sister. You know, and I was sober about 6 years at the time, and she called, and I ended up taking her to detox with a friend of mine, and, you know, she's sober like 26 years today, you know. It's amazing. It really is how this program works. You know, you think people aren't watching you. Everybody's watching you. Believe me. You know, you think you're drinking, you know. Everybody knows you're drinking. Stop drinking. It's like, you know, it must be in the newspapers, on TV or something. Because I remember I was working this one job, and this kid I went to elementary school with, but I didn't see for about 20 years, he can walk on the door and he sees me. He goes, Dick, are you still on the bright? How do you do it, you know? And people would come up to me and ask me, you know. And I was working for the city of Quincy at the time, and I was the only guy in AA. There were 60 guys in the crew. By the time I left, there were 6 guys sober, you know. They were all going to meetings, you know. And things were changing, slow but sure, you know. And it's because they were watching you, you know. I wasn't missing Mondays and taking off Friday. And I was living a normal life, you know. Since I've got sober, I haven't been in court, you know. I haven't been shot at. I haven't been arrested. Nobody's tried to stab me. All those things stopped happening once I stopped drinking. Do you think that's a coincidence? I don't. You know, if you're here today and you're sitting here, you know, I believe, this is just my belief, you're not here by mistake, you know, for an ultimate plan somewhere along the line. And I believe that's my higher power, you know, because it wasn't my idea to do different things, but I just followed suit. I listened to the people that were here before me. Because I knew nothing about getting sober. I knew how to get drunk. I was very good at that, you know. And, today, life is very simple. You know, we've been down here 7 years now, me and my wife. And my first wife still up in Massachusetts, and it's almost 33 years later, and she's still drunk. And she's married to drunk number 3 or 4, I guess. I don't know. But a lot of people don't get this program, you know. What do people think, you know, I can pick up a drink and if things get bad, I'll jump back into AA. It doesn't work that way. You know, I've got to have had a lot of friends and guys I've sponsored. You know, I had a very good friend, Tommy. Jeez, this guy could get a year in like nothing. You know, do everything right. A year later, then you pick up a drink. You know, lose everything, come back to AA, a year later, same thing. And he set up a patent. And I told him, Tommy, you got a patent going here. You know, and I couldn't believe this guy. You know, he had, you know, like a good job, nice apartment, nice chick, and everything was working good, you know. And then he'd pick up a drink, lose everything, he'd come back, he'd get a better job, a better car. And I said, geez, I don't know what the hell he does. But eventually it caught up to him, you know. I didn't hear from him for a while, and I heard, you know, they found him in his apartment. He did for 3 days. You know, he choked to death on his own puke, you know. And that's what happens to Elkies, you know. Booze will kill you. There's no ifs, buts, or what. You know, I've seen a lot of people go down the drain, you know. I was very fortunate. For quite a few years, I worked in a halfway house, and I watched the disease of alcoholism, how it takes people down. You know, and it's amazing. You think, you know, people that, you know, are higher up. I had this guy. He was the second highest surgeon in the state of Rhode Island. He was living in the halfway house, you know, and a full colonel in the service in the halfway house. And, you know, these people were way up there. You know, you would never think, you know, they could end up in the gutter. They were living out in the street, you know. And I used to say, you know, wow, you know, it's unbelievable. It doesn't matter if you're male, female, black, white, you know, it's going to get you. You know, booze will kill you, you know. And I'll tell you one thing, you know, I haven't had a drink since my first meeting, you know. Next Thursday, I have 33 years of sobriety. And I don't believe it, you know, because I can remember my first meeting. I can remember where different people were sitting, you know. And most of them people, you know, are still around. That's the amazing part, you know. You know, my sister, I talk to her once in a while on the phone, and she doesn't really go. She goes now and then. You know, she had 26 years, but she's involved with the church and the grandkids and all that stuff, you know. Me, I couldn't do that, you know. I stay active, you know, because if I don't stay active, I'm going to end up active, you know, and I just can't go that route, you know. So, you know, you're here tonight. You know, all you got to do is shoot for midnight. And I heard that, and, you know, she said, get up in the morning and go about my business, you know. Do what I have to do. Hit a meeting, talk to people, eat three meals, work, you know, and shoot for midnight. How much time do you really have to drink if you start filling in the hours? You know, and I've been doing that. And I just love being sober. You know, a sober life, you can't beat it. How many people get a chance in life to live two opposite lives? You know, I was no prize out there, let me tell you. I can tell you stories. I mean, you know, it's unbelievable. You know, if you sat near me and you were a woman, you put your pocketbook down, you know, it was empty before you knew it. You know, because my hand was right in there, you know. I'd steal from anybody. I didn't care. I'd steal your stuff and help you look for it later. You know, that's the kind of guy I was. And I could justify that in my own mind. Well, she had more money than I did, you know. I used to travel around a lot, too. And, you know, she's more times, you know, I'd get drunk in Massachusetts, I'd wake up in New Jersey, you know. And I went through California one time by bus, you know, and it was unbelievable. And the ticket's good for like 30, 60 days, so you can get off wherever you want. I spent a day, you know, a couple of days in Chicago, a couple of days here, a couple of days there. And the best part, my wife likes this story, is I got off the bus in Cheyenne, Wyoming. I met this guy from New York, and we're getting back on the bus. And the driver says, oh, no, I ain't taking you two over the mountains, you know. So we went on our way, and we were drinking and stuff, you know. Next thing I know, I'm in this big hall, you know, and everybody's got, you know, all sorts of medals and, you know, uniforms. And it was an Air Force base, and I had a new suit on with a tie, and I'm dancing with a girl with a gown on. And she's going, Dick, we had a great time at the rodeo, and I don't even know who the hell she is. I don't know where I am. All I know is I got to get a drink and get the hell out of here. You know? So that was my end in Cheyenne, Wyoming, believe me. Okay, thanks for listening.